said wistful. I turned in my seat and tried to see his face in the dark. So it's not just women who have to be careful around you, is that it? Does it just have to bleed to be attractive?
Leave him alone, Anita. About this, leave him the fuck alone.
I turned to look at Edward. He rarely cussed, and he rarely sounded as tired and almost overwhelmed as he did now. Okay, I mean, sure. Edward glanced in the rearview mirror. There wasn't a car in either direction for miles. I think he was looking at Olaf. He stared into the mirror a long time. I think they had some major eye contact going. He finally blinked and went back to staring at the road, but he didn't seem happy. What aren't you telling me?
Us, Bernardo said. What isn't he telling us?
All right, what aren't you telling us?
It's not my secret to tell, Edward said, and that was all he'd say.
He and Olaf had a secret, and they weren't willing to share. We finished the rest of the drive in silence. The sky was still black, but it was a paler black, the stars dim in it. Dawn was tremblingly close when we went into the house. I was so tired, my eyes burned. But Edward took me by the arm and led me down the small hallway away from the bedrooms. He kept his voice low.
Be very careful of Olaf.
He's big and bad, I get it. He dropped his hand from my arm, shaking his head.
I don't think you do.
Look, I know he's a convicted rapist. I saw the way he looked at Professor Dallas tonight, and I saw his reaction to the blood and torture. I don't know what you're not telling me, but I know that Olaf would hurt me if he could. I know that.
You're afraid of him?
I took a breath. Yeah, I'm afraid of him.
Good,
Edward said. He hesitated, then said,
You fit his Vic profile.
Excuse me?
His favorite victims are petite women, usually Caucasian, but always with long dark hair. I told you I would never have brought him in on this case if I'd known you were coming down too. It isn't just because you're a woman. You're his physical ideal for a victim.
I stared at him for a few seconds, mouth opened, then closed it, and tried to think what to say. Thanks for telling me, Edward. Shit, you should have told me this up front.
I was hoping he could hold his act together, but I saw him tonight, too. I'm worried that he'll snap. I just don't want you to be the one in the way when it happens.
Send him back to wherever he came from, Edward. We don't need him if he adds to the problem. He shook his head.
No. He's got a specialty that's perfect for this case.
And that specialty would be? He gave that small smile.
Go to bed, Anita. It's already dawn.
No. I said. Almost, but not quite. He studied my face.
You can really feel the sunrise without looking?
I nodded. Yep. He looked at me, and it was as if he were trying to read me now. For the first time, I felt that maybe, just maybe, Edward was as puzzled by me as I was by him sometimes. He escorted me to my room and left me at the door like an overprotective date. I was glad I'd prepared the room for safety before I left. If someone came through the window, they'd knock the dolls over or step on the mirror with its antlers. The door would have a chair and the suitcase in front of it. The room was as safe as it was going to get. I undressed, putting the guns and knives on the bed until I could decide exactly what was staying where for overnight. A man's extra-large t-shirt that hung past my knees came out of the overnight bag. I'd started keeping one change of clothes, nightclothes and toiletries in the overnight bag ever since the airline lost my luggage on a business trip. The last thing I pulled out of the overnight bag was my toy penguin, Sigmund. I used to only sleep with Sigmund every so often, but lately he'd been my constant companion under the sheets. A girl needs something to cuddle with at night. The Browning High Power was my other constant companion. At home, it stayed in a holster I'd rigged to my headboard. Here I put it under my pillow, making very sure the safety was on. It always made me slightly nervous to put a loaded gun under my pillow. Seemed less than safe, but not nearly as unsafe as being unarmed if Olaf came through the door. I had brought four knives with me. One of them went between the mattresses. I put the Firestar back into the suitcase. I wanted something bigger than a handgun. I had a sawed-off shotgun and a mini Uzi. Normally, I'd have brought more big guns, but I knew Edward would have more and better, and he would share. I finally decided on the mini Uzi with a modified clip that held 30 rounds with enough oomph to cut a vampire in half. It was a gift from Edward, so the ammo was probably illegal. But then, so was the gun. I'd been almost embarrassed about carrying it at first, but one night last August, I used it for real. I'd pointed it at a vampire, pulled the trigger, and cut him in half. It had looked like his body was torn in half by some giant hand. His upper body had fallen slowly to one side, his lower body collapsed to its knees. I still had the vision of it like a slow-motion image. There was no horror or regret. It was just a memory. The vampire had come with 100 of his friends to kill us. I'd tried to kill one of them as messily as possible to get the rest to leave us alone. It hadn't worked, but that was only because the vampires were more afraid of their master of the city than of me. Maybe the Uzi was overkill for a human being, but if by some chance I emptied the Browning into Olaf's chest and he didn't go down, I wanted to make sure he didn't reach me. I'd cut him in half and see if the pieces could crawl. Chapter 28. It was after 5 when I finally closed my eyes. Sleep sucked me under like a roll of black water, dragging me deep and instantly into a dream. I stood in a dark place. There were small, stunted trees everywhere, but they were dead. All the trees were dead. I could feel it. Something crashed over to my right, something large moving through the trees, and a sense of dread rode before it like a wind. I ran, hands up to protect my face from the dry branches. I tripped over a root and went sprawling. There was a sharp pain in my arm. It was bleeding. Blood poured down it, but I couldn't find a wound. The thing was getting closer. I could hear tree trunks snapping with sharp explosions. It was coming. It was coming for me. I ran and ran and ran, and the dead trees stretched out forever and there was no escape. A typical chase dream, I thought. And the moment I thought it, I realized it was a dream, and the dream changed, faded into another dream. Richard standing in nothing but a sheet, one tanned, muscled arm reaching out to me, his brown hair falling in a froth of waves around his face. I reached for him, and as my fingertips brushed his, a smile curving his lips, the dream shattered, and I woke. I woke, blinking into a patch of sunlight that spilled across the bed. But it hadn't been the light that had woken me. There was a light tapping on my door. A man's voice.
Edward says get up.
It took me a moment to realize it was Bernardo's voice. It didn't take Freud to analyze the dream at the end with Richard in a sheet. I was going to have to be careful around Bernardo. Embarrassing, but true. I sat up in bed, yelling through the door. What time is it?
10.
Okay, I'm coming. I listened, but didn't hear him walk away. Either the door was more solid than it looked, or Bernardo was quiet. If it had just been Edward, I'd have thrown on a pair of jeans under the oversized t-shirt and had some coffee. But there was company in the house, and it was all male. I managed to get into the bathroom in dress without meeting anyone in the hallway. I was wearing dark blue jeans, a navy blue polo shirt, white jogging socks, and my black Nikes. Normally, I'd left the guns off until I went out into the big bad world, but at Edward's house, the big bad world was staying in the next room. So I put the Firestar 9mm in an inner pants holster, set for a right-handed cross draw. Brushed, cleaned, and armed, I wandered toward the smell of bacon. The kitchen was small and narrow and white. But all the appliances were black, and the starkness of the contrast was almost too much first thing in the morning. There was another bouquet of wildflowers in the middle of a small white wooden table. Donna had struck again, but truthfully, I agreed with her. The kitchen needed something to soften it. The two men sitting at the table did nothing to humanize the room. Olaf had shaved so that the only hair left were the black lines of his eyebrows. He wore a black tank top, black dress slacks. Couldn't see the shoes, but I was betting on a monochromatic look. He was also wearing a black shoulder rig with a big automatic of some kind. I didn't recognize the brand. A black hilted knife was in a holster under his left arm. Shoulder holsters chafe when you wear them with tank tops, but hey, it wasn't my problem. Bernardo wore a white short-sleeved t-shirt and black jeans. He pulled the top layer of his hair back on either side with a large, multicolored barrette. There was still plenty of hair to fall down past his shoulders, stark and black against the pure whiteness of his shirt. He was wearing a 10mm Beretta just in back of his right hip. I couldn't see a knife on him, but I was betting it was there. Edward was at the stove, emptying a pan of scrambled eggs onto two plates. He was also wearing black jeans with matching cowboy boots and a white shirt that was a twin of the one he'd worn yesterday. Gee, guys, do I have to go back to my room and change? They all looked at me, even Olaf.
What you're wearing is fine, Edward said.
He carried the plates to the table and put one in front of each of the empty chairs. There was a plate of bacon in the center of the table beside the flowers.
But I don't match, I said.
Edward and Bernardo smiled. Olaf didn't.
Big surprise.
You guys look like you're in uniform, I said.
I guess we do, Edward said.
He sat down in one of the empty chairs. I sat in the other one. You should have told me there was a dress code.
We didn't do it on purpose, Bernardo said.
I nodded, which is what makes it funny.
I am not changing clothes, Olaf said.
No one's asking you to, I said. I was making an observation. My eggs had bits of green and red things in them. What's in the eggs?
Green peppers, red chilies, and diced ham, Edward said.
Gee, Edward, you shouldn't have. I liked my scrambled eggs the way God intended them, plain. I pushed the eggs around with my fork and reached for the bacon. Half the plate was barely cooked, the other half done to a crisp. I went for the crisp. The bacon on Olaf's plate was the crispy kind, too. Oh, well. I said grace over the food. Edward kept eating, but the others hesitated, uncomfortable with their mouths full. It's always fun to say grace at a table with people who don't. That uncomfortable silence. The panic while they wonder whether to keep chewing or to stop. I finished praying and took a bite of bacon. Yum. What's the game plan for today? I asked.
You haven't finished looking at the files, Edward said.
Bernardo groaned.
I think it is a waste of time, Olaf said. We have gone over the files. I do not believe that she will find anything new.
She's already done that, Edward said.
Olaf looked at him, a piece of bacon halfway to his mouth.
What do you mean?
Edward told them.
That is nothing, Olaf said.
It's more than you came up with, Edward said quietly.
If I am such a burden on this job, maybe I should leave, Olaf said.
If you can't work with Anita, maybe you should.
Olaf stared at him.
You would rather have her as backup instead of me?
He sounded astonished.
Yes, Edward said.
I could break her in half over my knee, Olaf said.
The astonishment was turning to anger. I suspected that most emotions turned into anger for Olaf.
Maybe, Edward said, but I doubt she'd give you the chance.
I held up my hand. Don't make this a competition, Edward. Olaf turned to me slowly. He spoke very slowly, very clearly.
I do not compete with women.
Afraid you can't measure up? I asked. The moment I said it, I wished I hadn't. The momentary satisfaction wasn't worth the look on his face as he rose from his chair. I leaned into the table and drew the fire star, pointing it in his general direction under the table. Olaf stood, looming over me like a muscular tree.
Edward has spent the morning talking to me about you, trying to convince me that you are worth listening to.
He shook his head.
You are a witch, and I am not. The thing we hunt may be magical, and we need your expertise. Maybe this is all true, but I will not be insulted by you.
You're right, I said. I'm sorry. It was a cheap shot. He blinked at me.
You are apologizing?
Yes. On the rare, rare occasions when I'm wrong, I can apologize. Edward was staring at me across the table. What? I asked. He just shook his head.
Nothing.
Olaf's hatred of women is sort of a handicap, and I try not to make fun of people with handicaps. Edward closed his eyes and shook his head.
You just couldn't leave it alone, could you?
I am not a cripple.
If you hate anyone or anything with an unreasoning, uncompromising hatred, then you are blind where that hatred is concerned. The police kicked me out of a crime scene yesterday because the cop in charge is a right-winger, squeaky-clean Christian, and he considers me devil spawn. So he'd rather more people get killed and mutilated than have me help him solve the case. He hates me more than he wants to catch this monster. Olaf was still standing, but some of the tension had drained away. He seemed to actually be listening to me. Do you hate women more than you want to catch this monster? He looked at me, and for once his eyes weren't angry. They were thoughtful.
Edward called me because I am the best. I have never walked away from a job until the quarry was dead.
And if it takes my preternatural expertise to help kill the monster, can you deal with that?
I don't like it, he said.
I know that, but that's not what I asked. Can you handle my expertise helping you kill the monster? Can you take my help if it is the best thing for the job?
I don't know, he said.
At least he was being honest, even reasonable. It was a start. The question, Olaf, is which do you love more, the kill or your hatred of women? I could feel Edward's and Bernardo's stillness. The room held its collective breath waiting for the answer.
I would rather kill than do anything else, Olaf said.
I nodded. Great, and thank you. He shook his head.
If I take your help, it does not mean that I consider you my equal.
Me either, I said. Someone kicked me under the table. I think it was Edward. But Olaf and I nodded at each other, not exactly smiling, but I think we had a truce. If he could control his hatred, and I could control my smart-ass impulses, the truce might last long enough for us to solve the case. I managed to reholster the Firestar without him noticing, which made me think less of him. Edward had noticed, and I think so had Bernardo. What was Olaf's specialty? What good was he if he didn't know where the guns were? Chapter 29. After breakfast, we headed back into the dining room. Bernardo had volunteered to do the dishes. I think he was looking for any excuse to get out of the paperwork. Though I was beginning to wonder if Bernardo had been as badly spooked by the mutilations as Edward had been. Even the monsters were afraid of this one. Last night I'd been ready to look at the forensic reports next, but in the clear light of day I could admit that it was cowardice. Reading about it was not as bad as seeing it. I so did not want to look at the photos. I was afraid to see them, and the moment I admitted that to myself, I moved them to the top of the list. Edward suggested we stick all the pictures on the walls of the dining room. And put pinholes in your nice clean walls, I said.
Don't be barbaric, Edward said. Will you sticky putty?
He held up a small packet of the pliable yellow rectangles. He peeled off some and handed it to Olaf and me. I squeezed the stuff between my fingers, rolling it into a ball. It made me smile. I haven't seen this stuff since elementary school. The three of us spent the next hour putting the pictures up on the wall. Just handling the sticky putty made me remember fourth grade and helping Miss Cooper hang Christmas decorations on the walls. We'd hung cheerful Santas, fat candy canes, and bright balls. Now I was hanging vivisected bodies, close-ups of skinless faces, shots of rooms full of body parts. By the time we had one wall covered, I was mildly depressed. Finally, the pictures took up almost all the empty white wall space. I stood in the center of the room and looked at it all.
Sweet Jesus.
Too harsh for you? Olaf asked.
Back off, Olaf, I said. He started to say something else, but Edward said,
Olaf.
It was amazing how much menace he could put into one ordinary word. Olaf thought about it for a second or two, but in the end he let it go. Either Olaf was getting smarter, or he was afraid of Edward too.
Guess which way I was voting.
We'd grouped the photos by crime scene in large clusters. This was my first glimpse of the bodies that had been torn apart. Dr. Evans had described the bodies being cut by a blade of unknown origin, then disjointed by hand. But that had been a very clean description of what had actually been done. At first, all my eyes could see was blood and pieces. Even knowing what I was looking at, my mind refused to see it at first. It was like looking at one of those 3D pictures where at first it's just colors and dots, then suddenly you see it. Once you see it, you can't unsee it. My mind was trying to protect me from what I was looking at by just simply not allowing me to make sense of it. My mind was protecting me, and it only does that when it's bad. Really, really bad. If I had just walked out now before my eyes made sense of it, I might escape the full horror of it all. I could turn on my heel and march out of here. I could just refuse to take one more terror into my brain. Probably a good idea for my own sanity, but it wouldn't help the next family that this thing got a hold of. It wouldn't stop the mutilations, the deaths. So I stood there and made myself stare up at the first picture, waiting to see what was really there. The blood was brighter than movie blood, a cherry red. They'd gotten to this scene before the blood had started to dry. I spoke without turning around. How did the police find the bodies so quickly in this house? The blood is still fresh. Edward answered.
The husband's parents were supposed to meet them for an early breakfast, before work.
I had to look away from the picture, at the floor. You mean his parents found him like this?
It gets worse, Edward said.
How could it possibly get worse? I asked.
The wife told her best friend she was pregnant. The breakfast meeting was to tell the husband's parents they were about to be grandparents for the first time.
The rug swam in my vision, like looking at it through water. I reached back for a chair and eased my way into it. I put my head between my knees and breathed very carefully.
You all right?
Edward asked. I nodded without raising up. I waited for Olaf to make a sarcastic remark, but he didn't. Either Edward had warned him off, or he thought it was horrible too. When I was sure I wasn't going to throw up or faint, I spoke with my head still between my knees. When did the parents arrive at the house? What time? I heard the paper rustle.
6:30.
I rested my cheek against my knee. It felt good. When did the sun come up?
I don't know,
Edward said. Find out, I said. Gee, the rug on the floor was kind of pretty. I raised up slowly, still practicing nice, even breaths. The room did not swim. Good. The grandparents-to-be arrived at 6:30. It takes what, 10 minutes less for them to recover enough to call the cops? Then uniforms arrive on the scene first. It could take 30 minutes or an hour, more, for a crime scene photographer to arrive, and yet the blood is still fresh. It hasn't dulled yet, let alone started to brown.
The parents nearly walked in on it,
Edward said. Yeah, I said.
What difference does that make? Olaf asked.
If dawn was closer to 6:30, then the critter can be out in daylight. Or it went to a hole close to the murder scene. If it wasn't close to dawn, then it may be limited to darkness. Edward was smiling down at me like a proud parent.
Even with your head between your knees, you're still thinking about the job.
But what does it gain us? Olaf said. If the creature is limited to darkness or daylight.
I looked up at him. He was looming over me again, but I kept sitting down. Wouldn't look very macho if I stood up and fell down. If it's limited to darkness, then it may help us figure out what kind of critter it is. There really aren't that many preternatural creatures that are limited exclusively to darkness. It would help narrow the list.
And if it holed up near the first murder scene, Edward said, we might find some traces.
I nodded. Yeah.
The police tramped over that area within an inch of its life, Olaf said.
Are you saying you can find something that they can't?
His arrogance was showing. With the first murder, especially, the police were looking for a human perpetrator. If you're looking for a human being, you look for different things than if it's a monster. I smiled. Besides, if we didn't all think we could find things that the police couldn't, we wouldn't be here. Edward wouldn't have called us in, and the police wouldn't have shared the files with him. Olaf frowned.
I have never seen you smile like this, Edward, unless you are pretending to be Ted. You look like a proud teacher whose pupil is doing well.
More like Frankenstein with his monster, I said. Edward thought about it for a second, then nodded and grinned, pleased with himself.
I like that.
Olaf frowned at both of us.
You did not create her, Edward.
No, I said. But he helped make me the woman I am today. Edward and I looked at each other, and the smiles faded from both our faces, leaving us solemn.
Am I supposed to apologize for that?
He asked. I shook my head. Do you feel like apologizing for it?
No,
he said. Then don't. I'm alive, Edward, and I'm here. I stood, and didn't sway at all.
Life was good.
Let's find out if any of the killings took place after daylight. When I've looked at all this shit, let's go see some murder scenes. I looked at Edward. If that's all right with you. You is the boss. He gave a small nod.
That's fine, but to keep Ted working with the Santa Fe PD, we'll need to include them at the murder sites.
Yeah, I said. Police don't like civvies mucking up their murder scenes. Makes them testy.
Besides, you're already persona non grata in Albuquerque, Edward said. We've got to keep some of the cops willing to talk to you.
And that's really bugging me, I said. I'm barred from the freshest crime scenes, the newest evidence. I don't need another handicap on a case like this.
You don't know what it is either, do you?
Edward said. I shook my head and sighed. Not a damn clue. Bless his chauvinistic heart, but Olaf didn't say I told you so. I went back to staring at the pictures, and suddenly I could see it. I let out a breath and said softly, "Wow." The room seemed hot. Damn it, I was not going to have to sit down again. I put my fingertips on either side of the wall, steadying myself, but it must have looked like I was trying for a closer look.
Trust me, I was as close as I ever wanted to get.
I finally had to close my eyes for just a few seconds. When I opened them, I was okay, or as okay as I was likely to be. Body parts scattered like flower petals, stirred into a red mess. My eye flicked from one blood-covered lump to another. I was almost sure that was a forearm, and the ball of a knee joint showed whitely amid all the red. I'd never seen so many pieces before. I'd seen bodies torn apart before, but that had been for food or punishment. But there was a terrible completeness to this destruction. I moved on to a shot of the same image but from a slightly different angle. I tried to put the body together in my head but kept coming up short on parts. I finally turned around. There's no head and no hands. I pointed at small lumps in the blood.
Unless those are fingers.
Was the body completely disjointed even down to the finger bones? Edward nodded.
Every victim has been almost completely dismembered down to the joints.
Why? I asked. I looked at Edward. Where's the head?
They found it down the hill behind the house. The brain was missing.
How about the heart? I asked. I mean, there's the spine, almost intact, but I don't see any viscera. Where are all the internal organs?
They didn't find them, Edward said.
I leaned back, half sitting on the table. Why take the internal organs? Did they eat them? Is it part of some magical ritual? Or is it just part of the ritual of the killing itself, a souvenir?
There are a lot of organs in the body, Olaf said. You put them all in one container and they can be heavy, bulky. They also rot very quickly unless you put them in some form of preservative.
I looked at him, but he wasn't looking at me. He was looking at the pictures. He hadn't given a lot of detail, but something in the way he said it made him sound like he knew what he was talking about. And how do you know how heavy the internal organs of a human body can be?
He could have worked in a morgue, Edward said.
I shook my head. But he didn't. Did you, Olaf?
No,
he said, and now he was looking at me. His eyes had been turned into two dark caves by the deep set of his face and a trick of light, or would that be darkness? He stared down at me, and without seeing his eyes I could feel the intensity of that stare, as if I were being studied, measured, dissected. I kept my gaze on Olaf but asked, "What is his specialty, Edward? Why did you call him in on this particular case?"
"The only person I've ever seen do anything close to this is him," Edward said.
I glanced at him, and his face was calm. I turned back to Olaf. "I was told you went to jail for rape, not murder." He looked right at me and said,
"The police arrived too soon."
A cheerful voice called out from the front of the house. "Ted, it's us!" It was Donna, and the "us" could only mean the kids. Edward left at a goodly walk, trying to head her off. I think Olaf and I might have still been staring at each other when she walked in on us, but Bernardo came in and said,
"We're supposed to hide the pictures."
"How?"
Olaf asked. I took the candelabrum off the table and said, "Put the tablecloth over the door." I stood aside and let Bernardo drag it off the table. Olaf said,
"Aren't you going to help him? You are one of the boys, after all."
"I'm not tall enough to hold it up over the entire door," I said. He gave a small smile, derisive, but he moved up to help Bernardo block the open doorway with the tablecloth. I was left standing behind them with the black iron candelabra in my hands. I stared at the tall, bald man, and was half regretful that I wasn't tall enough to smash the heavy iron candelabra into his skull. Just as well. I'd owe Edward another favor if I killed one of his backups just because he'd scared me. Chapter 30. I could hear Edward in his best consoling Ted voice, trying to convince her that she didn't need to say hi to everyone. She argued, polite but firm, that of course she did. The more he tried to keep her away, the more she wanted to see. Call it a hunch, but I was betting it was me she wanted to see. The house was arranged so that you couldn't enter the three guest bedrooms without going through the dining room. Donna wanted to make sure where I was, and that I hadn't been in anyone's bed but my own, or at least not in Ted's. Did she think that I was racing ahead of them to my room to throw clothes over my nakedness? Whatever the motive, she was coming this way. I heard Becca's voice. Shit. I ducked under the rug across the door and nearly ran into them. Donna stopped walking with a small of surprise. Her eyes were wide as she looked at me as if I'd scared her. Peter was watching me with cool brown eyes, as if it was all too boring for words, but underneath the perfect teenage boredom was a light, an interest. Everybody wondered why the tablecloth was in front of the doorway. It was Becca who said it.
Why is the rug in front of the door?
I kept calling it a tablecloth because that's what Edward was using it for, but it still looked like a rug. Kids stick to the basics. Donna looked at Edward.
Yes, Ted. Why is the tablecloth in front of the door?
Because we're holding it, Bernardo said from behind the improvised curtain.
She stepped close to the cloth.
And why are you holding it?
Ask Ted, Bernardo and Olaf said together.
Donna turned back to Edward. I usually know what Edward will say, but with Donna I was out of guesses.
We've got the pictures from the case spread all over the room. They aren't something I want you or the kids to see.
Gee, he went for the truth.
It must be true love.
Oh, she said. She seemed to think about it for a second or two, then nodded. Becca and I will take the goodies through to the kitchen. She lifted a white string-wrapped box, took Becca by the hand, and went towards the kitchen. Becca was straining backwards, saying,
But Mommy, I want to see the pictures.
No, you don't, sweetie, Donna said, and very firmly led the child away. I thought that Peter would follow, but he stood there, looking at the doorway, then glanced at Edward.
What kind of pictures? He asked. Bad ones, Edward said. How bad? Anita, Edward said.
Some of the worst I've seen, and I've seen some awful stuff, I said.
I want to see, Peter said.
I said, no. Edward said nothing, just looked at him. Peter scowled at us.
You think I'm a baby? I wouldn't want your mom to see them either, Edward said. She's a wimp, he said. I agreed with him, but not out loud. Your mother is who she is, Edward said. It doesn't make her weak. It just makes her Donna.
I stared at him, trying very hard not to gape, but I wanted to. I'd never heard him cut anyone any slack for anything. Edward was not just judgmental. He was a harsh judge. What chemical alchemy did the woman have to have won him over? I just did not get it. I think what Ted is trying to say is that it isn't your age that makes us not want to show you the pictures.
You think I can't handle it, Peter said.
Yeah, I said. I think you can't handle it.
I can handle anything that you can handle, he said, arms crossed over his thin chest. Why? Because I'm a girl?
He actually blushed as if embarrassed.
I didn't mean that.
But of course he had. But hey, he was 14. I'd let it slide.
Anita is one of the toughest people I've ever met, Edward said.
Peter squinted at him, arms still hugging his chest.
Tougher than Bernardo?
Edward nodded.
Tougher than Olaf?
And I thought more of the kid that he'd put the two men in that order. He knew instinctively which was the scariest man, or maybe it was just Olaf's size. No, I think Peter had a feel for the bad guys. It's something you either have or you don't. It can't really be taught.
Even tougher than Olaf, Edward said.
There was a disgruntled sound from behind the rug, the sound of Olaf's ego getting bruised. Peter looked at me, and the look had changed. You could almost see him thinking, trying to put my petite female self in the same category as Olaf's aggressive male presence. He finally shook his head.
She doesn't look as tough as Olaf.
If you mean arm wrestling, I'm not. He frowned and turned back to Edward.
I don't understand. I think you do, Edward said. And if you don't, I can't explain it to you.
Peter's frown deepened. Part of the problem with the tough guy code, I said, is that a lot of it can't be explained.
But you understand it, Peter said.
He sounded almost accusatory. I've spent a lot of my time around very tough guys.
That's not it, Peter said.
You're different from any girl I've ever met.
She's different from any girl you will ever meet, Edward said.
Peter looked from one to the other of us.
Mom's jealous of her.
I know, Edward said.
Bernardo's voice came from inside the room.
Can we lower the rug now?
Don't tell me you tough he-men are getting tired, I said.
Lactic acid builds up in everybody's muscles, Chicky, Bernardo said.
I'd started the name-calling, so I let the Chicky comment go. You need to join your mom and Becca in the kitchen, I said.
Do I?
He was looking at Edward, and I realized he was appealing to Edward, asking permission. Yes, I said, and looked at Edward, trying to tell him with my eyes not to do this. But he had eyes only for the boy. They stared at each other, and something passed between. Some knowledge. Something.
Drop the cloth, Edward said.
No, I said, and grabbed Peter's arm. I spun him around so his back was to the door. I'd caught him by surprise so he didn't struggle. Before he could decide what to do about me, Edward spoke.
Let him go, Anita.
I looked at him around Peter's shoulder and realized he was taller than me by a few inches. Don't do this.
He wants to see? Let him see.
Donna won't like it, I said.
Who's going to tell her?
I looked into Peter's dark eyes. He will, when he gets mad enough at you or her or both.
I wouldn't do that, Peter said.
I shook my head. I didn't believe him, and that more than anything made me let go of his arm and back off. If Edward showed Peter this little corner of hell and word got back to Donna, it might be enough to break them up permanently. I was willing to trade some of Peter's innocence for that. Harsh, but true. The rug fell away on Olaf's side first, then Bernardo was left holding the rug in his arms like a limp child. He looked at Edward and shook his head, but he stepped back beside Olaf and let Peter walk into the room. I followed behind him and Edward. Olaf had moved back near the far door. Bernardo laid the cloth on the table and stepped back to the far end of the table. I took up station at the far wall, almost mirroring Olaf, but at the opposite door. We'd all moved to separate corners of the room, and all of us tried to separate ourselves from what was happening. I don't think even Olaf approved. Peter took in all the pictures, turning around and around. He paled, and his voice was a little breathy.
Are those people?
Yes, Edward said.
He stayed right beside Peter, not touching, not too close, but very definitely with him. Peter walked to the nearest wall, to the pictures I'd just been looking at.
What happened to them?
He asked.
We don't know yet, Edward said.
Peter looked at the pictures, eyes flicking from one horrible image to another. He didn't walk the room or study any one picture as closely as I had, but he looked. He saw what was there. He didn't scream or faint or throw up. He'd proven his point. He wasn't a wimp. I wondered if I should warn him about the possibility of nightmares. Nay, he'd either have them or he wouldn't. He was still pale, with a light dew of sweat on his upper lip, but he was mobile, and his voice was breathy but calm.
I better help Mom in the kitchen.
He walked out, still hugging his arms around himself as if he were cold. No one said a word as he walked out. When I was pretty sure he was out of earshot, I walked up to Edward. Well, that went better than I thought it would.
It went about the way I thought it would, Edward said.
Shit, Edward, the kid is gonna have nightmares.
Maybe. Maybe not.
Pete's a tough kid.
He was looking out through the doorway as if he could still see the boy. His gaze was far away. I stared at him. You're proud of him. Proud of the fact that he looked at this, I motioned at the pictures, and didn't freak.
Why shouldn't he be proud? Olaf asked.
I looked at him. If Edward were Peter's dad, maybe. But he's not. I turned back to Edward. I stared at him. His face was its usual blankness, but there was a flinching around the eyes. I touched his arm, and the touch was enough. He looked at me. You're treating him like a prospective son. I shook my head. You cannot have this family.
I know that, he said.
I don't think you do, I said. I think you're actually beginning to think about doing it for real. He dropped his gaze, not meeting my eyes.
Shit, Edward.
Shit.
I hate to admit it, but I agree with her, Olaf said.
If it was just a boy, then I would see no problem. I think you can make of him what you will, but the woman and the girl...
He shook his head.
It will not work.
I don't understand why you even want a family, Bernardo said.
For different reasons. Neither of you believe in marriage, Edward said.
True, Olaf said. But if men like us do marry, it should not be a woman like Donna. She is too...
He struggled for a word and finally said,
innocent. And you know that I do not say that about many women.
Maybe that's one of her attractions,
Edward said, and he seemed as truly puzzled as the rest of us.
You're already screwing her. Why marry her?
This from Bernardo.
If all I wanted was sex, I'd have gone elsewhere, Edward said.
She any good?
Bernardo asked. Edward just looked at him. One long look. Bernardo raised his hands.
Sorry. Sorry, just curious.
Don't be curious about Donna, Edward said.
He turned to me.
You believe in marriage. Underneath all that toughness is a Midwestern girl that still believes in the white picket fence.
I do believe in marriage, but not for people like us, Edward. I don't know what he would have said to that, because the phone rang and he went to answer it.
Saved by the bell, I said.
He intends to marry this woman, Olaf said.
I nodded. I'm afraid so.
If he wants to marry her, it's his business, Bernardo said.
Olaf and I stared at him until the smile on his face faded to a look of puzzlement.
What?
Olaf may be a serial rapist, Bernardo, or even a serial killer, but in his own twisted way, he has more scruples than you do. Doesn't that worry you? Bernardo shook his head.
No.
I sighed. Edward came back into the room. His face was back to his normal Edward face, as if all the near revelations of just a minute ago had never happened.
The monster did another couple in Albuquerque last night.
Shit, I said. Are you going without me? Edward was watching my face just a little too closely, so I knew there was a surprise coming.
Your presence has been requested on site.
I could feel the surprise on my face. Is Lieutenant Marks not in charge anymore?
It was him on the phone.
You're kidding me, I said. Edward shook his head and smiled. I don't get it.
I'd guess that someone up the feeding chain chewed his ass for kicking you out. They probably gave him a choice of working with you or being off the case.
I had to smile. A case like this can make a career.
Exactly, Edward said.
Well, we know Marx's price now.
Price?
Bernardo asked.
You guys bribed him?
No, I said. But his principles that he so kindly spat in my face yesterday weren't as precious to him as his career. Always nice to know how strong a person's convictions are.
Not that strong, Edward said.
Apparently not, I said. I heard Donna coming down the hallway, talking loudly to Becca, but I think it was to warn us that they were coming. The men grabbed the rug and went for the doorway. Edward said in his loud, cheerful Ted voice,
"Saddle up, boys and girls. We got work to do."
I went for my room. If we were going to go outside the house, I needed more weapons. Chapter 31. I sat in the front seat beside Edward. It was probably my imagination, but I could feel someone staring at the back of my neck. If I wasn't imagining it, I was betting on Olaf. I'd added the shoulder holster complete with Browning high power. Usually it was the only gun I wore until someone tried to kill me, or some monster showed in the flesh. But I'd kept the Firestar in its inner pants holster. Too many pictures of dismembered corpses for comfort. I even took all the knives, which tells you how insecure I was feeling. Being stared at hard enough to bore a hole through my flesh was beginning to get on what nerves I had left. It wasn't my imagination. I could feel it. I turned in the seat and met Bernardo's eyes. There was a look on his face when I turned around that was nothing I wanted to see. I had an uncomfortable thought that he was fantasizing, and I just might be in the starring role. "What are you staring at?" I asked. He blinked, but it seemed to take a long time for his eyes to really focus on me rather than whatever was inside his head. He gave a slow, almost lazy smile.
I wasn't doing anything.
Like hell, I said.
You can't tell me what to think, Anita, he said.
You're presentable enough. Go get a date.
I'd have to wine and dine her, and then I couldn't count on sex at the end of the evening. What good is that?
Then get a hooker, I said.
I would if Edward would let me out on my own.
I turned and looked at Edward. He answered the question without me having to voice it.
I've forbidden Olaf from dating while he's here. Olaf resented it, so I told Bernardo the same thing.
Very even-handed, I said.
It is totally unfair to punish me because Olaf is a psycho, Bernardo said. If I cannot meet my needs, then why should you be able to? Olaf said.
There was something in his voice that made me look at him. He was staring straight ahead, no eye contact to anyone. I turned around in my seat and looked at Edward. Where do you come up with these people?
The same place I find vampire hunters and necromancers, he said.
He had a point. Enough of a point that we finished the drive to Albuquerque in silence. I felt I had enough moral high ground to throw stones, but evidently Edward disagreed. Since he knew Olaf better than I did, I wasn't going to argue. At least not now. People talk of ranch-style houses, but this really was a ranch. A ranch as in cowboys and horses. It was a dude ranch for tourists, so whether it counted as a really real ranch, I wasn't sure. But it was the closest thing to an actual working ranch that I'd ever set foot on. The ranch really wasn't in Albuquerque, but in the middle of nowhere. In fact, the house and corrals sat in the middle of a whole lot of nothing. Empty space with bunches of dry grass and strange, palish soil stretching out and out to the horizon. Hills ringed the ranch like smooth piles of rock and brush. Edward drove us under an entrance that had a cow's skull nailed to it and said, Dead Horse Ranch. It was so similar to 100 Western movies I'd seen on television that it seemed vaguely familiar. Even the corral full of horses spilling in an endless, nervous circle seemed stage-managed. The house wasn't exactly what I had pictured, being low to the ground and made of white adobe, much like Edward's house, but newer. If you could have just erased the plethora of police cars, emergency units, and even some fire rescue equipment, it would have been picturesque in a lonesome, down-on-the-prairie sort of way. A lot of the police cars had revolving lights, and the crackle of police radios was thick in the air. I wondered if it was the lights, the noise, or just this many people making the horses nervous. I didn't know much about horses, but surely rushing back and forth around their pen wasn't normal behavior. I wondered if they had been running in circles before the cops came or after. Were horses like dogs? Could they sense bad things? Didn't know. Didn't even know who to ask. We were stopped just inside the gate by a uniformed cop. He took our names and went off to find someone who would let us pass, or find someone to tell him to kick us out. I wondered if Lieutenant Marks was here. Since he'd issued the invite, it seemed likely. What kind of threat to his career had they used to get him to invite me back? We waited. None of us spoke. I think we'd all spent a lot of our adult lives waiting for one uniform or another to give us permission to do things. It used to get on my nerves, but lately I just waited. Maturity? Or was I just getting too worn down to argue over small stuff? I'd have liked to say maturity, but I was pretty sure that wasn't it. The uniform came back with Marks trailing behind him. Marks's pale tan suit jacket flapped in the hot wind, giving a glimpse of his gun riding just behind his left hip. He stared at the ground as he walked, briskly, all business, but he was careful not to look at us. At me, maybe. The uniform got to us first, but he stood a little back from the open driver's side door and let the lieutenant catch up. Marks finally got there, and he looked fixedly at Edward, as if he could exclude me by just not looking at me.
Who are the men in the back?
Otto Jeffries and Bernardo's spotted horse.
I noticed that Olaf had to use an alias, but Bernardo got to keep his real name.
Guess who was wanted for crimes elsewhere?
What are they?
I wouldn't have known how to answer that question, but Edward did.
Mr. Spotted Horse is a bounty hunter like myself, and Mr. Jeffries is a retired government worker.
Marks looked at Olaf through the glass. Olaf looked back.
Government worker. What sort of government worker?
The kind that if you contacted the State Department, they'd confirm his identity.
Marks tapped on Olaf's window.
Olaf rolled the window down with the nearly silent buttons on the door handles.
Yes?
He said in a voice that was totally devoid of his usual German burr.
What did you do for the State Department?
Call them and ask,
Olaf said. Mark shook his head.
I have to let you and Blake inside my crime scene, but not these two.
He jerked a thumb at the back seat.
They stay in the car.
Why?
Bernardo said. Marks looked at him through the open window. His blue-green eyes were mostly green right now, and I was beginning to realize that meant he was angry.
Because I said so, and I've got a badge and you don't.
Well, at least it was honest. Edward spoke before Bernardo could do more than make inarticulate noises.
It's your crime scene, Lieutenant. We civilians are just here on your sufferance. We know that.
He twisted in his seat to give the two men direct eye contact, but turned so Marks couldn't see his face well. I could, and it was cold and full of warning.
They will be happy to stay in the car, won't you boys?
Bernardo slumped in his seat, arms crossed on his chest, sulking, but he nodded. Olaf just said,
Of course. Whatever the good officer says.
His voice was mild, empty. The very lack of tone was frightening, as if he were thinking something very different from the words. Marks frowned but stepped back from the car. His hand hovered around his body as if he had a sudden desire to touch his gun, but didn't want to appear spooked. I wondered what had been in Olaf's eyes when he spoke those mild words. Something not mild, that I was certain of. The uniformed cop had detected something in Marks. He stepped closer to his lieutenant, one hand on the butt of his gun. I didn't know what had changed in Olaf, but he was suddenly making the cops nervous. He hadn't moved. Only his face was turned towards them. What was he doing with just his facial expression that had them so jumpy?
Otto?
Edward said softly, so that the sound didn't carry outside the car. But as he had in the house when he said, Olaf, that one word carried a menace, a promise of dire consequence. Olaf blinked and turned his head slowly towards Edward. The look on his face was frightening. Feral, somehow, as if he'd let down his mask enough to show some of the madness inside. But as I looked at him, I thought this was a face to deliberately frighten people. A sort of tease. Not the real monster, but a monster that people could understand and fear without thinking too hard. Olaf blinked and looked out the far window, face bland and as inoffensive as it got. Edward turned the car off and handed his keys to Bernardo.
In case you want to listen to the radio...
Bernardo frowned at him but took the keys.
Gee, thanks, Dad.
Edward turned back to the police officers.
We're ready to go when you are, Lieutenant.
He opened his door as he said it. The door swinging open made Marks in the uniform take a step or so back. I took it as my cue and got out on my side. It wasn't until I came around the front of the Hummer in full sight that Marks finally paid attention to me. He stared at me, and his face was harsh. He could manage not to show outright hatred in his face, but he couldn't manage neutral. He didn't like me being here. He didn't like it one little bit. Who had twisted his tail in a knot hard enough to force him to let me back on board? He opened his mouth as if he'd say something, closed it, and just started walking towards the house. The uniformed officer followed at his heels, and Edward and I trailed behind. Edward had his good old boy face on, smiling and nodding to the police officers, the emergency workers, everyone and everything in his path. I just stayed at his side, trying not to frown. I didn't know anybody here, and I'd never been comfortable greeting strangers like long-lost friends. There were a lot of cops outside in the yard. I spotted at least two different uniforms, enough plain clothes to open up a discount men's store, and some plainclothes detectives that stood out. I don't know what they do during FBI training that is different from anywhere else, but you can usually spot them. The clothes are slightly different, more uniform, less individual than with regular cops, but it's more an aura about them, an air of authority as if they know that their orders come straight from God and yours don't. I used to think it was insecurity on my part, but since I'm rarely insecure, that can't be it. Whatever it was, they had it. The feds had arrived. That could speed things up. Be a big help, or slow things to a crawl and fuck up what little progress had already been made. It depended almost entirely on how the police in charge got along with each other, and how protective everyone was of their turf. These crimes were gruesome enough that we might actually see some cooperation between jurisdictions.
Miracles do happen.
Usually when there's a body on the ground, the police of whatever flavor are inside at the scene walking on the evidence. But there were too many people out here. There couldn't possibly be that many more inside the house. The house was big, but not that big. Only one thing would keep them out in the New Mexico heat. The scene was a bad one. Gory, piteous, frightening, though no one will admit out loud to that one. Pick an adjective, but the police milled around the yard in the heat with their ties, the women in high heels on the loose gravel. Cigarettes had appeared in a lot of hands. They talked in small, hushed voices that didn't carry above the crackle of radios. They huddled in small groups, or sat alone on the edge of cars, but not for long. Everyone kept moving, as if to remain still was to think, and that was a bad thing. They reminded me of the horses, nervously running in circles. A uniformed police officer was sitting at the open doors of the ambulance. The emergency medical technician was bandaging his hand. How had he gotten hurt? I hurried to catch up with Marks. If he were the man in charge, he'd know what had happened. Edward just fell into step behind me, no questions, just following my lead. He had ego problems with me sometimes, but on the job, there was nothing but the job. You left the shit outside the door. You could always pick it up on your way back out. I caught up with Marks on the long, narrow wraparound porch. What happened to the uniform that's getting his hand bandaged? Marks stopped in mid-stride and looked at me. His eyes were still a hard, pitiless green. You always think of green eyes as being pretty or soft, but his were like green glass. He had a big hate on for me. A big one. I smiled sweetly and thought, fuck you too. But I'd learned lately to lie even with my eyes. It was almost sad that I could lie with my eyes. They really are the mirror to the soul, and once they go, you are damaged. Not beyond repair, but damaged. We stared at each other for a second or two, his hatred like a fine burning weight, my pleasant smiling mask. He blinked first, like there'd been any doubt. One of the survivors bit him. My eyes widened. Are the survivors still inside? He shook his head. They're on their way to the hospital. Anybody else get hurt? When you ask that at a scene where Vics are down, you almost always mean other cops. Marks nodded, and some of the hostility drained from his eyes, leaving them puzzled. Two other officers had to be taken to the hospital. How bad? I asked. Bad. One nearly got his throat ripped out. Have any of the other mutilation Vics been that violent?
No, he said.
How many Vics were there?
Two, and one dead. But we're missing at least three other people, maybe five. We've got a couple unaccounted for, but other guests heard them talking about a picnic earlier. We're hoping they missed the show.
I looked at him. He was being very helpful, very professional. Thank you, Lieutenant.
I know my job, Ms. Blake.
I never said otherwise. He looked at me, then at Edward, then finally settled his gaze on me.
If you say so.
He turned abruptly and walked through the open door behind him. I looked at Edward. He shrugged. We followed Marks in, though I noticed we'd lost the uniformed officer somewhere in the walk across the yard. No one was spending more time inside than they had to. The living room looked as if someone had taken white liquid and poured it down to form the sloping walls, the curved doorways leading away into the house, the free-form fireplace. There was a bleached cow skull above the fireplace. A brown leather couch wrapped a huge, nearly perfect square in front of the cold fire. There were pillows with Native American prints on them. A huge rug that looked almost identical to one of Edward's took up most of the center of the floor. In fact, the entire place looked like an updated version of Edward's place. Maybe I still hadn't seen Edward's sense of style. Maybe this was just a type of Southwestern style that I'd just never seen. There was a large open section that had been a dining room area. The table was still there. There was even a chandelier formed of what looked to be deer antlers. There was a pile of white, red-soaked cloth to one side of the table. Blood was seeping out of the bottom of the cloth bundle, leaking across the polished hardwood floor in tiny rivulets of crimson and darker fluids. A photographer was snapping pictures of something on the table. My view was hidden by three suit-covered backs. Panic clawed at my throat, and it was suddenly harder to breathe. I didn't want the men to move. I did not want to see what was on the table. My heart was pounding in my throat, and I had to take a deep, shaking breath, clearing my throat. The deeper breath had been a mistake. The smell of fresh death is like a cross between an outhouse and a slaughterhouse. There was an acrid stink, and I knew the intestines had